You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, June 1st, 2017.
A guitar in 20 minutes can change your life. Because that song that he wrote had such amazing commercial success when so much of a lot of the other stuff that he did didn't.
WFHB's Hondo Thompson discusses the legendary musician John Hartford later in the show on today's episode of Big Talk with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks about media coverage of the investigation into President Trump's connections to Russia. But first, these local headlines.
The city of Bloomington has been just awarded a $300,000 grant to test for hazardous substances and petroleum contamination along the Beeline Trail. The money comes from the Environmental Protection Agency, which announced 172 similar grants to communities across the country. The grants are intended to help communities deal with sites known as brownfields, which have been contaminated and are complicated to redevelop. In Bloomington, the grant funding would be spent on environmental assessments of 6 to 8 different sites in the Beeline Trail corridor. According to information provided by the EPA, $150,000 will be allocated to test sites for what the agency calls hazardous substances. The remaining $150,000 will be spent on testing sites for petroleum contamination. Grant funds would also be used to develop cleanup plans.
Eagle Point Golf Resort has reopened for business after being shut down by the Indiana Department of Revenue for a tax violation on Tuesday morning. The ceasing of business's activity occurred after a letter requesting tax documentation from the Department of Revenue was signed for but never received by the new owner, Doug Thomas. Board member of the Point Service Association, Glenn Adams, believes confusion occurred during the golf resort's transition period when old and new management both filed taxes for the same time period on the golf resort.
The deal finally went through last December, and if there was any taxes hanging out there, there's no way the title companies would allow it to go through. And two, this business hasn't been open long enough for there to be any back taxes. So obviously there was just a confusion on who was supposed to be paying what.
Doug Thomas worked with his accounting team to provide the proper documentation Tuesday afternoon. Law enforcement removed the sign saying the resort had violated the tax code, and this allowed business to resume on Wednesday afternoon.
But last night they opened the business and there was quite a few people in the bar, and we had a lot of golfers out playing golf today, so business as usual, I guess.
The golf resort is now open and functioning for regular scheduled business hours.
The Willie Streeter Community Gardens are still offering garden plots and raised beds for rent this growing season. Located at 2120 South Highland Avenue, the gardens are just north of the Winslow Sports Complex. Rent covers water, fencing, composting. Bloomington Parks and Rec staff resources and newsletters. The gardens are available until October 31st, with a select few being open for year-round use. Registration takes place in person at the Parks Office in City Hall from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. All gardeners are welcome.
The Bloomington City Council continues to debate whether to make it legal for bicyclists to ride on city sidewalks. The issue is just one of several changes proposed in a larger revision of the city's traffic code, but the sidewalks issue is prompting the most discussion among council members. Project engineer Neil Copper recommended legalizing sidewalk riding with some conditions.
A bicycle cannot ride on a sidewalk if the sidewalk is congested with pedestrian traffic. A person on a bicycle would be required to yield to all pedestrians on the sidewalk. They'd be required to give an audible warning when passing a pedestrian on the sidewalk. They'd be required to dismount if necessary to pass a visually impaired person without inconveniencing them. There's a requirement that a person on bicycle couldn't pass within 3 feet of a pedestrian if they're traveling faster than an ordinary pedestrian pace. A person on a bicycle wouldn't be allowed to suddenly leave a sidewalk into the path of a vehicle. And a person on bicycle would be required to operate at an ordinary pedestrian speed when they're approaching a driveway or intersection if there's a vehicle approaching that driveway or intersection close enough that it could cause a hazard.
It's currently illegal to ride a bicycle on city sidewalks, but the law isn't often enforced. Copper said there are circumstances where it's safer for a bicyclist to be riding on the sidewalk, and the code revisions would provide some legal protections.
Just as an example, a high-speed, high-volume street that doesn't have a separate bicycle facility, some people on bicycle would prefer to be on the sidewalk, especially if there are no pedestrians on that sidewalk. The current code makes that behavior illegal, so if there were a crash, it could place liability on the bicyclist, regardless of any other actions that took place. So we want to provide legal protections to people that we think are acting appropriately.
Beth Rosenbarger, the city's bicycle and pedestrian coordinator, said if the code changes are approved, the city will launch an education effort targeting both cyclists and automobile users. Of those members of the public who spoke on the topic, most favored allowing cyclists on sidewalks. City resident Paul Rousseau said that while the city claims to be bicycle friendly, most of the city doesn't have the infrastructure to cycle safely.
I live near Hillside. I would characterize Hillside as a 45-mile-an-hour highway disguised as a residential street. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace to the city. And there's a 4-foot sidewalk there. You either get killed in the street or you ride on the sidewalk.
Mark Stossberg, a member of the city's Bicycle and Pedestrian Safety Commission, told the council that he and his family are often forced onto sidewalks due to the lack of bicycle lanes or paths.
For us, it's along 3rd Street. I love that there's some multi-use paths for part of it, but they're not complete. And rather than ride in 3rd Street with my children, we ride on the sidewalk for the places where there's not better facilities.
Stossberg went on to say he talks to his family about appropriate cycling behavior.
I talk to them about when it's safe and why we ride on the sidewalk and when we don't. When it's pedestrians, we slow down and we pass them. I haven't talked to them about civil disobedience or how they're being a criminal every week, but I did move here to Bloomington in part so my kids could grow up in a city where cycling is a normal, safe, and appreciated. And I love that's the kind of community we are, and I would appreciate when we take a safe, direct route to a practical destination that we would not be criminalized for that.
Some council members voiced concerns about changing the existing bicycle laws. Council member Chris Sturbaum said a compromise might be needed.
It's the all or nothing that's wrong here, you know. We all know there are places where it's needed. We all know it isn't a crime to ride to church with your kids in a safe manner. You know, we all know that. How do we add the safety sidewalks where it really makes sense, and how do we respect the pedestrian in the area where it doesn't make any sense to ride?
Council member Isabel Piedmont-Smith said she was skeptical of passing a rule which is not likely to be enforced.
I hate to pass a rule that's even more difficult to enforce. I think that currently, if the police were so inclined and if the administration were to talk with the police about increased enforcement, I think it's relatively easy. You see a bicyclist on a sidewalk, they're ticketed, they're not allowed, they're given a good talking to, they're fined, whatever, it's wrong. If we change the rules to base it on the behavior of that bicyclist, I mean, that bicyclist could be behaving fine one block and then, you know, passes too close to somebody and then goes on. If we're just enforcing the rule about no bicycles on the sidewalk, you can say, hey, policeman, look, this guy's riding a sidewalk. There are much greater chance that somebody else will see it, maybe photograph it, whatever. But if the rule is you can't pass closer than 3 feet next by this pedestrian, that happens in an instant. You're not going to be able to enforce anybody, even if you have more police out there.
The council agreed to postpone voting on the ordinance changes until its August 9th meeting. Piedmont Smith said she would like more public feedback before the city council takes up the legislation again. The proposed changes came from the Traffic Commission, the Bicycle and Pedestrian Safety Commission, the city's Planning and Transportation Department, and the Legal Department. The legislation addresses more than just riding bicycles on sidewalks. It also provides regulations for roller skating, skateboards, and scooters. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service can be found online at smithvillesecurity.com.
The John Hartford Memorial Festival, a celebration of bluegrass music and its many variations, is happening now through Saturday night in Bean Blossom. WFHB's Hondo Thompson is the new main stage MC, taking over for the legendary Sam Jackson. The veteran host allowed Thompson to introduce American Roots star Pokey LaFarge last year, and now Thompson has replaced the retired Jackson. Hondo joins Michael Clapp to talk about John Hartford and the fest on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. My guest this week in the studio, the inimitable Hondo Thompson. Hi, Hondo.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Hondo is the main stage MC at the John Hartford Memorial Festival. It's going on right now. In fact, it started yesterday over at the Bill Monroe Music Park Camp. That's in Bean Blossom, just north of Nashville, on State Road 135. You're the big guy introducing all the bands. What's going on over there, and what are you going to be talking about?
It is an absolute party over there. The John Hartford Festival has gained its recognition as the most laid-back festival in America, and we live up to that. There'll be about 2,000 people over there over the days that we're there. 40 bands from all over the country on four different stages performing from roughly 11 o'clock in the morning till midnight. It's just going to be constant music and a tribute to a great man, Mr. John Hartford. One of the neatest things, Mike, that happens out there is after the stages, there are just organic jams that happen around campfires, literally from the time the band stop until the sun comes up.
John Hartford, the Rolling Stone, called him one of acoustic music's most versatile, talented, and engaging iconoclasts. He was a well-known guy. Now, he wrote a big, giant, monster song.
Yes.
What was that?
Gentle on My Mind. It was a song that he wrote in 20 minutes that guitar players to this day talk about. A guitar in 20 minutes can change your life. And they refer to that moment when John Hartford wrote that song. Because that song that he wrote had such amazing commercial success when so much of a lot of the other stuff that he did didn't. And I'm sure we'll get into that. But it allowed him to financially explore all the other things he wanted to do musically.
Now, how did this fest come about, and why is it here in South Central Indiana?
Well, if you don't know, the Bill Monroe Stage in Bean Blossom, Indiana, is the mecca for bluegrass music. It is said that if you haven't played on Bill's stage, you cannot call yourself a real bluegrass musician. That's the, you know. The Bill Monroe Bluegrass Festival has gone on. Last year was its 50th anniversary, and that is pure bluegrass.
Right.
And there's certain, they're not plugged in, there are no drums. Typically, back when Bill was doing it, there's not long hair. Very rare to see a woman in the lineup and so forth and so on.
Ah.
Okay? To answer your question, John Hartford's good friend John Hotsey had the vision after John Hartford passed away. That something needed to be done to memorialize him, that a festival needed to be put together, and that the people that were inspired by his music would have a place to play. And that happened. It happened 7 years ago. There were a couple years that John ran it on his own, and it had mixed success. John Hotsey is a lover of music, but needed help from a business point of view.
Mm-hmm.
He engaged Tom Burkhart, a businessman out of Louisville, to come help him, I think the third or fourth year. This is the seventh year. I've been involved for six. And from there, it really took off. And it's become family. I mean, you see the same people now for my sixth year. You're starting to see the same people who are coming from Missouri and Wisconsin and Florida and even out in California. And I had a band from New York who was playing Mardi Gras rhythms with Appalachia tied together, and they called it Mardi Gras. You know, so it's all over the place in terms of what's going on.
Hartford himself mm-hmm. was instrumental, you'll pardon the pun,
mm-hmm.
in starting something called Newgrass.
Yes. After the commercial success of Gentle on My Mind, John got a record deal. What was produced was a milestone in Newgrass music, and a lot of people say that's where Newgrass started, which was John Hartford's Aeroplane.
Uh-huh.
He and his friends got together, and they had an opportunity to do what they wanted to. I guess there were, I'm making some assumptions here, but I'm assuming that the record company just assumed they were going to go in and do what he had done before.
Have at it.
But he did have at it. So it was Norman Blake, Tut Tuttle, Vassar Clements, and John Hartford. It was him, maybe Sam Bush was in there, but they said he let us play what we wanted to play.
Yeah.
And that was the essence of the entire album. Old style music, old style instruments, the strings instruments, without anything plugged in, without the drums. Anyone would think, looking at them, this is going to be a bluegrass album. Yeah. But it was anything but.
So how did it sell?
Not well, but it had a cult following.
Right.
And it affected thousands of musicians and bands from 1971, when it was released, to now.
How did you get involved with this whole shebang?
So 6 years ago, Jim Mannion, our music director,
yep.
comes to me and
WFHB
comes to me and said that there's a need for someone to help out there, and would I mind coming out and maybe helping in the background of all this stuff. So within the next year or two, I'm sitting at this table constantly, and within a year or two, somebody came up and said, we had a DJ or an MC call in sick. Can you MC a few hours on the backstage?
Hmm.
I said, yeah, absolutely. So I did that, and it was absolutely great. Loved it. The next year, they said, do you want to have the backstage? Would you be the MC on the backstage? I said, yeah, I'd be happy to. So I took the Hippie Hill stage and did most of that. And in that, got pulled up to the main stage for the first time. There's an outstanding man named Sam Jackson, just a silky gravy voice that just washes over you. I mean, he is, I don't know if he would allow me to call him my mentor, but secretly he is in the MC world. He's been on that stage, I believe it was over 30 years. He was the voice of the Bill Monroe stage for the Bill Monroe Festival for a generation or more. And, you know, when he comes up to that mic and goes, friends, I got to tell you about the next band. And just puts all that credibility and knowledge and love into that voice. He set the mood for the festival. And last year was the 50th Bill Monroe Festival. And he told us, I'm going to do the 50th, and then I'm going to retire. So he retired. And I had an opportunity to work side by side with him for 2 years as his fill-in when he would go to lunch and he would take these so forth and so on. And someone came up and they said, Sam wants to see you on stage about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I said, okay. So I went up and said, Sam, what can I do for you? And he put his hand on my shoulder. Towers over me. Man's well over 6 feet tall. And he said, Hondo, I'm glad you came up here. He said, look, it's been a long festival. And I'm thinking I'm going to be pretty tired here in a few hours and I'm going to need a little break. And I wonder, friend, if you wouldn't do old Sam a favor and if you could find it in your heart, I mean, he really milked it for all it was worth. Could you come up here and bring old Pokey to the stage for me? And that was huge. That was huge because it was my first time on the Bill Monroe stage. And if you're brought up in Indiana down in these parts and you love bluegrass music, that's a big deal to even be on that stage.
Sure.
And then to do the Saturday night headliner and then have that Saturday night headliner be your favorite band. I mean, it was a huge moment, you know, something you remember the rest of your life.
Hondo Thompson, thanks for being on Big Talk.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
You can hear this episode of, in all episodes of Big Talk with Michael Glab on FHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. located at monstardigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, do you think the media are focusing too much on a possible Trump-Russia connection? After the firing of FBI Director James Comey and the appointment of Special Counsel Robert Mueller, the media continue to report front and center about the possibility of a connection between President Trump and Russia. Voices in the Street has asked your friends and neighbors whether they think that the media are focusing too much on this issue.
No, because it's crazy, yeah. And they need to be focused more on it and not sweep it under the rug.
I think it's a valid concern. If there is at all a correlation or association with him and Russia in the election or any other thing, we should probably figure it out.
No, I don't think so, because I think it should be investigated in full, and I believe that there might be a connection there that could be significant.
No, because I think they're real and I think they should be investigated.
It's hard. No, because I mean, if it's an important topic, because you should determine if he is or not like connecting with Russia.
No, because it's a matter of national security. Trump seems to be flouting his beliefs that he's a dictator as opposed to a public servant.
Yes.
I just think the media needs to like give him a chance to prove himself and kind of lay off for a little bit and see how things work out.
I think the media is a very broad term, and it's actually a pretty diverse group of outlets owned by a lot of the same companies, but I think it's really serious. I mean, Russia's led by a man who has shown he has no ethic.
I think it's important to vet the possibility of it, but I feel like there's other issues that could be used, that time could be used for as well.
Absolutely not.
No?
We need the media. Yeah. They're doing a great job.
I wouldn't say so. I would say if there's any connection with Trump that we should devote our attention to it. Gotcha. It's an issue in our society, and I don't think any resources are wasted.
Wow, that's a really good question. No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd like a little, you know, happier news in the world. But no, I think keeping us informed on even if it's just little connections here and there, I think is wise on our part, right? Because we chose him as our president.
Yes, I do. I think there's plenty of other issues with the Trump administration to look into rather than getting a little too sidetracked by possible conspiracy laced issues.
A lot of speculation.
I'm only going off of print media, but I do not think they are wasting enough time on Trump's possible connections to Russia.
No.
No?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Because I think there's that much smoke, there's fire. And I'm from D.C. You know something? I've only been here 2 years, so I still have an awful lot of connections back there. This is a lot worse.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Ashley Curtis, Joe Crawford, and Cole Stinson, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Von Provosky. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music was provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, independent daily news program.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show. It's coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.